Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 282 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and what you talk about together about all of that when you're in an office setting, when you're in a crowd. Whoa, wait a minute. Things have changed here. Topics are kind of shifting. This is interesting. So we're going to be talking about how we communicate with others about things that we didn't used to talk about, you know, like our bodies. All right, now we've got a terrific show coming up. And before we begin, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, run on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Okie dokie, now here's your first reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because I'm just sitting here waiting to hear from you. Okay, now, here we are, ready to start the Her episode. What's it going to be about?
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind. Her body. Her life. It's all about her.
Well, wait a minute now. Is this really what I think it's going to be about? Yep, it is. I'm so excited. I can't stand myself. This is all about being able to communicate things that we as women always kept hushed up before. How about fertility treatments? Are they now company business? You know, topics like IVF used to be taboo. I mean, you didn't talk about those things, right? But now all of a sudden, we're opening up about these topics between coworkers, bosses, organizations are just changing around this. And who wrote about this? Well, I think someone who's kind of an expert, kind of knows these things, and that is Rachel Feinzig. Now, Rachel is the work and life columnist for the Wall Street Journal. I absolutely love reading her column because she really nails it each time. And that's it. After I read this column, I said, I'm bringing you on, and now you could be a regular, because we need to hear more about this. And guess what? Because we are now have a new kind of work life, we really need to talk about this more openly. This is quite fascinating. So she writes about the intersection of jobs, well, and everything else. And from 2013 to 2020, she's covered management and career trends as a reporter for the paper's Management Bureau, writing about everything from dating at work, ruh-roh, to people who get tattoos of their company's logo. Uh-huh. Okay, well, and the part that I just loved here, Rachel, I'm so sorry, a former bankruptcy reporter. Now, you got to tell me what the hell that is. Rachel, welcome to the Her podcast, for crying out loud. What the hell is a bankruptcy reporter?
Thank you so much for having me. That was like my first journalism job, and I did it for years because I ended up getting the job right as the 2008 recession was starting. But yeah, I covered bankruptcy cases, so companies that were not doing great. It was different than what I do now, but it's important.
I love it. I just love it. So your column on this whole issue of how, you know, we're now opening up about things like, oh my gosh, fertility treatments, and it now being, as it were, company business, it blew me away, because I'm a physician and a national women's health expert. And if I could just tell you how many times a woman has had to undergo something like, as you opened up about, miscarriage, and had to go back to work, for all intent and purposes, couldn't really share that, didn't feel comfortable about it. Just raise your hand out there in the Her podcast land if you think that that didn't impact on everything in her life, including her own productivity. Ha! So what made you write about this, Rachel? Because it's such an awesome topic.
It's a really important topic to me. I mean, I was inspired in part by my own experiences. I went through IVF. I had a miscarriage. I had a pregnancy that kind of devolved in the third trimester. And I thought about a lot of that in relation to my work life. Because like you said, I mean, you can't separate those things. And I started hearing from a lot of women that they were sick of kind of staying quiet about this stuff, that they were telling their managers that they needed help organizing their schedules when they had tons of appointments for IVF. And, you know, more women are going through IVF. So it's just becoming a bigger deal. And I think people are seeing folks in pop culture, you know, Amy Schumer post about IVF on her Instagram, Michelle Obama say, you know, I went through IVF to have my daughters, and people are thinking, like, why not me? Like, why can't I be open about this and hopefully, you know, have an empathetic workplace where they can understand and help me get through this?
When you were doing the research for this, were you actually, you know, sensing a shift? I mean, a real shift, or is this just a little one-off here and there, and the rest of the world's just a cluster? I mean, is there really a shift going on here?
I think it really is a shift because, I mean, I talked to a lot of folks who weren't even included in the article who talked about that. You know, I talked to like a recruiter who noticed that women were opening up about their pregnancies, like during the interview process or just earlier at work, you know, people who weren't even going through something difficult, but who were just sharing their pregnancy earlier on. I mean, this was also at a point, you know, when I started reporting this, the job market was really hot. It was kind of like an applicant's market. So I think people found safety in that. And I talked to Joan Williams, who's a longtime, you know, researcher about women's issues, women in work. And she told me, like, you know, she's in her 60s, I believe 60s or 70s. And she told me, you know, that like I think her quote was like, we hit it until we were about to pop. I mean, so she definitely had seen a shift over her time. So I think it is real. I think it is really happening. Which is not to say that there are not people out there who don't feel comfortable or that there are workplaces where it's not safe to share this. And I certainly don't want to lead anyone astray if they're in a situation where, you know, there are risks, you know, involved in this, and not all workplaces are going to be open to you talking about this kind of stuff. So, you know, I wanted to make that clear in the article. But overall, yes, I do think there's been a shift over the years.
Oh, I think that's fabulous. You know, you shared with me your Saturday essay that you wrote about your pregnancy experience last go around, I believe. And you wrote this, I believe it was January 24th, 2020. I was just absolutely transfixed reading this. What a hell of an experience, you know, giving early birth and having physicians stare at you and not really quite know what's going on. It's like, well, you know, it could be good, it could be bad, it could be, you know, and you're like, wait a minute now, just hold on, hold that thought. And what that was like. Now, I have two questions for you. One is, well, first of all, I'm thrilled to know that you put a picture of your gorgeous one in there, that everything is beautiful now. And her name is Luisa, if I remember correctly.
Yes. And yes, she's great. People always ask me. They're like, gorgeous. Is she okay? And yeah, she's wonderful.
Oh my God, she's gorgeous. So, you know, what was it like for you when you were going through all of this, number one? And number two, what was it like for you to write this very private thing publicly and share your experience?
So going through it was the hardest thing that I've ever done. I mean, it was awful. I mean, it's kind of like that thing. I felt like it was a thing I had worried about almost my whole life, you know, like you're carrying this baby and it's like your responsibility and it's in your body. And I wanted, you know, kids so much, and I had already had a hard time, you know, having my son, and then kind of had this, you know, lucky pregnancy and everything was going fine. And then it's like, you know, just, it felt like it came out of nowhere. It was, you know, devastating to go from that kind of like before moment where everything is fine to the moment where like your stomach, you know, just lurches and they tell you that something is wrong. And then a lot of it was just around like navigating the uncertainty and the limbo, right? Like just like you said, no one can kind of tell you what's what, and you, you expect that, like, you know, in, and this was in 2018, 2020, like, you expect that, like, even if it's bad news, that there are answers, you know, that there are tests, like, you know, they can tell you the gender of your baby at like 9 weeks, and they can look at microdeletions. You know, there's so much that we can do now. And I was just kind of flabbergasted that no one seemed to really know what was going on, that it was kind of like this mystery and we would all have to just wait and see. And the waiting and seeing for me as like a, you know, kind of type A person was, you know, I think for anyone though, in that situation, it was just kind of excruciating. Does that answer like your first question? I mean, it was rough.
How did that affect you at work? You know, with sharing that.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I told my boss right away. I wanted them to know what was going on. I mean, logistically, I think a lot of women feel like this with IVF and stuff. Logistically, I felt like I had to tell her. I mean, I work remotely, you know, even before COVID, I worked remotely a decent amount, but I would commute into the city once a week. And so I knew I wasn't going to be able to do that. I needed to stay close to my hospital. And then I also, I mean, this, it happened so suddenly, and part of going forward was like, I needed to monitor the baby's movements very frequently. Like I felt like I was really like the first, you know, I was like the one who knew her best, and like, it was my job if things didn't feel right to go into the hospital right away. So I felt like I had to flag it for my boss, and she, you know, she immediately said like, you know, anything you need, just pick up, go to the hospital. Like, don't worry about us. It felt really wonderful to have the support of my colleagues and my editors. I think some people didn't really know what to say, which is, you know, to be expected. And I think, you know, I still felt a lot of pressure. Like, I wanted to keep doing my job. I wasn't sure when I was going to deliver, what my life was going to look like for the next few weeks or months. I mean, everything was so unclear. And so it was really hard to focus on work, but I wanted to, like, I wanted to still have that part of my life to keep me grounded, if that makes sense.
Yes, I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, this had to be, I was, like I said, first of all, you wrote beautifully about your experience.
But then, thank you.
To share that with everyone too, I think that normalizes it. It makes it like,
I
this
hope
is
it
okay.
Does, yeah.
Well, don't you think that that's a great benefit of reading a journalist's personal account? It's like, okay, wait a minute. If that was shared with, you know, the Wall Street Journal, you know, people, and my God, I don't know how many million people, you know, subscribe, I certainly do, then it's got to have touched so many people's lives. And you know what I also love about this, quite frankly, as I think it through, Wall Street Journal is read by, you know, business folks, and I also have a biotech business hat, and bosses and CEOs and founders, and they're probably seeing themselves, holy moly, you know, that's a lot. And I really need to honor and respect that when that happens in someone's life. And, you know, I don't have to get into the, you know, into the weeds about every single detail, but I have to honor and respect the fact that somebody went on that kind of a journey. It's going to obviously affect their life and their productivity and, you know, what they're doing. And maybe I need to take a step back and figure out how I can create a new narrative around that. So that it's okay. You know, please let me know what's going on in your life. When I say, hey, how you doing? Tell me, you know, the things that you think are pertinent that I should know so that I'm part of that support system that you need so much. Does that make sense, Rachel?
Yeah, of course. Of course. And I hope it did that. And it's a good point that, you know, these stories and this story, especially, like, I hope, and I think it did, you know, reach women who had been through this, reach men who had been through this, but also people who hadn't been through this, right? And who might be in positions of power, who might be bosses and have the ability to change the way that people talk about this stuff at work. I mean, that, yeah, I mean, if that happens, then I've done my job, right? That's the thing.
I just absolutely love it. So, you know, kudos to you for having done this and helping people and messaging this. So now we get back to just plain old folks out there. Okay, now let's just say you had this beautiful part of your column, which I just love, you know, and that is, okay, now that you've read all these stories and we've kind of opened up about this, should you share? So you then laid down a really cool pathway to how to talk about fertility issues at work and figure out whether to speak up in the first place. The first one was consider the risks and benefits. What's that all about?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to really think through how this could hurt or help your career. I mean, there might be people out there who are wondering, you know, what you're doing all day if you have to step out to a lot of appointments. Maybe they think you're interviewing for another job. It could actually be helpful for them to know what's really going on. It might take a weight off their chest. But you have to also consider whether it could hurt you. Are you about to come up for a promotion? Do you work at a workplace where this might not be super accepted, where, you know, your colleagues, like, you know, kind of roll their eyes when you take a sick day. So you have to, like, really evaluate what the benefits or the costs might be for you in your workplace.
I love it. Okay. So consider the risks and benefits, because really, to your point, you need to just sit down and look around you, you know, and say, well, yeah, how comfortable is anybody in your current work environment with this type of topic? So just be a little careful, be realistic, and, you know, kind of rein in your expectations a little bit. Now, once you decide to proceed, your next point was think about what you want. Walk us through that.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is you really should be thinking about what, like, how your manager can help you or what the point is of you sharing. So it shouldn't just be that you think of your manager as a therapist. You know, there should be some kind of purpose. So are you looking, for example, to have your hours be flexible, to have people be kind of gracious with your schedule? Think about what you want and then kind of adjust what you're saying based on that.
You know what I loved about that? When I read that, I started laughing out loud, doing a little LOL moment, because especially when you're talking to a man, and I'm going to be horribly general about this, but what the hell? And, you know, a lot of guys like to fix things. They just do. You know, it's sort of like the metaphor is just go find that hammer and nail and, you know, fix it. And there's nothing to fix here, right? Mm-hmm. There's just... Yep. You know, you're not going to, like, undo a miscarriage, or you're not going to, you know, you're not a pivotal piece of a plan to adopt a child, say, for instance. But what you can do is just be, and you said it beautifully, you know, that gracious with your schedule, you know. So in other words, how can you be most supportive of that individual, of that woman, as she's going through a really tough time right now? What can you do? Because and then get it out of your mind to fix it. Because there's no major, like, there's not a solution. It's done. You had strep throat. Here's the amoxicillin. God bless. Okay. It's not one of those situations. Mm-hmm. This, you know, it's dynamic and it's living and breathing. And I think, you know, as a physician, I know for a fact that, you know, having done it for years and years and years, that sometimes I think one of my most important roles in life is to listen. I'm going to be there to support and listen instead of just saying, okay, I'm going to open your chest and, you know, no, it's just, you know, shut up and just listen and be mm-hmm. there and care and show kindness and empathy. That's kind of what that's really all about. And that's why I loved reading what you had said, because it just speaks to that. Okay, now here's an interesting one. Your next point along this pathway to, now that I'm going to share, is pick the right moment. How do you do that?
So this one made me LOL, because this advice was from an expert from an infertility support group. And all I could think was, like, I did this totally wrong when I was going through IVF years ago, because I totally, like, marched right into my boss's office.
All right, damn it. You know, listen up.
Failed,
you know,
yeah. IVF, like, less like that and more just like I was teary, you know, like I wasn't in a great place emotionally. And so the idea with this is, like, don't do that. Like, don't launch into the conversation when you're feeling emotional, when you've just had a big failure. You know, go in when you're feeling okay, prepare your points in advance, practice what you'll say, and go in the moment when you're feeling good. So you'll be a little more even keeled than I was.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, that kind of, you know, flows right into your next point, which was don't overdo it. You know, it's like, is that kind of fall into we talk too much, we overshare? Well, what's the don't overdo it thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's this idea of like not oversharing and like, you know, it is still work. So like, you know, an expert made the point to me, like, if you talk about anything endlessly at work, it's an unwelcome distraction. And it's the same thing with fertility stuff. You know, read the room. If certain team members are uncomfortable, pull back a little bit. And of course, if someone wants to talk more, like, oh, you're opening that door for them, right? You're opening that door to maybe be a support for others going through this. But you're like noticing the signs, you know?
I love it. I love it. So yeah, you know, you got to be able to read the room. You got to know if things are getting a little funky in there, which really brings us to the final piece, which is, no, it's okay to stay quiet. Go to that place for a minute. When's it okay to stay quiet?
Yeah, I just wanted people to know, like, I don't want to be pressuring someone with this article, especially if you're in a workplace that maybe it isn't super safe. You feel like your job could be in jeopardy if you share too much. You know that it's okay. Like, if this is something you want to do because you want to educate others and you want to kind of combat stigma, but it still just feels too scary, like, that's okay. Just kind of give yourself permission to not share.
I think that that's extremely important. You know, it's so interesting, Rachel, you've taken me down memory lane. I've for years volunteered myself as a medical director and otherwise for Race for the Cure for Breast Cancer. We have the largest 5K in the country here in Washington, D.C., and so we have lots and lots and lots of folks, and I've worked with breast cancer patients. I've had the honor of working with breast cancer patients for many years. And one of the things I remember, it's just like it was yesterday, over the years, that many breast cancer patients literally would be diagnosed and simply did not want to share with anyone. They were terrified that the people at work would, you know, treat them differently in a way that would be very uncomfortable and maybe deleterious to their professional career. And what the whole diagnosis meant and back and forth. And so you talk about fertility, and it just made me remember that in a big way, and how some people are so quiet, about issues like that. And that it is really okay. But I also remember a lot of fear when people tried to share. Where was that going to go? How would that affect them? So they kept quiet for that reason. Did you run into any of that?
I did. Yeah. I mean, I interviewed women who ended up not being comfortable taking their stories public. I talked to someone who said, I just fear that kind of my colleagues' empathy will run out at some point. And it's really hard. Like I said, I want to encourage people to share if they can, but I also want to acknowledge the reality. I mean, there are risks. There are, you know, tons of pregnancy discrimination claims out there. And there are workplaces that are just not safe. And I wish it wasn't so, but it's, you know, it's reality. And so I wanted to make sure to represent that in my story. And there are a lot of legal experts, especially, who would say, you know, don't share anything medical, like, it can be held against you. And so I think you have to look really closely at your workplace and think carefully.
Well, I think that that is an incredibly important point. And there are those people who, I was thinking of Justice Ginsburg, you know, who just sort of quietly kind of do their thing. You know, when they run into some problems, obviously the word gets out and back and forth. But honestly, just do their thing. I have a very fond memory, here in Washington, of having walked into a hairdresser that I no longer use, but down in Georgetown. And as I was sitting there getting ready for my usual stuff, which isn't much, I saw Justice Sandra Day O'Connor at that time, who was sitting on the Supreme Court bench, walk into a room in the past, and she waved, and very, very gracious and lovely. And she was in the process of, you know, having a wig done and some other stuff. She was very open about it years later. But at that time, she was just quiet and was just lovely. And later on, talked about what happened when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. We recognized each other because of my work with the Race for the Cure for Breast Cancer. And I just remember the stories of her just going back to her chambers and just laying down after chemo, and then just getting up when she felt better and just, you know, hitting the desk and not saying a word.
Incredible.
It just like, it was jaw dropping. And those kinds of things hit me a lot when I was reading your column. I was thinking, wow, this is such an incredible topic. And I so thank you for bringing it up, because the fertility issue is a monster. It's a big one, but it opens up the door to so much more, you know? And mm-hmm. So, you know, and really, I think all of us, one of the biggest takeaways is just saying to ourselves, are we making a welcoming and supportive environment within which we can all work and thrive, really, at the end of the day, and how to do that optimally for everybody involved. So it's a real win-win that's healthy, and that just reeks of great well-being. I don't know. What do you think is your last thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I just think the sense that, like, if you are able to speak up, it really can make a difference. I mean, I know it's hard. You kind of asked before what it was like writing about this for the journal. I thought, like, I'm a natural oversharer. I'm a millennial, and I'm a professional writer. Like, how hard could this be? And I was shocked by how hard it was, you know, to write the words, how scared I was when it came out. You know, I totally get it. But you really can make a difference. I mean, even just this column that I did recently about fertility, I mean, there were women who read it who said, I had never thought about this, but I went to my employer and asked them to introduce a policy to give paid time off for women after a miscarriage. And they said yes. And now it's a thing at my company. And like, imagine how much that might mean to someone, you know? So I just think it can be really powerful. And so if you are in a position where you feel comfortable and safe and you feel like you can say something in any way, whether that's sharing your own story or pushing for a different benefit policy, it's so impactful to do that.
I love it. I think that your column just opened it all up. And I'm telling you right now, our Her podcast listeners are probably falling off their collective chairs saying, well, thank God someone out there opened up this topic, because it's a monster. It's a huge topic. And I can't thank you enough, Rachel, you know, for being on the Her podcast and sharing all of this. Everyone out there, we've been talking to Rachel Feinzig, and she is the work and life columnist at the Wall Street Journal. And guess what, Rachel? You're now officially a regular on the Her podcast, because, I mean, if you keep this up, this is the way it's going to be.
I'm delighted.
That's just the end of it. Okay? I mean, that's a threat and a promise. Okay? Both of them together. I can't thank you enough once again for being on the Her podcast. And everyone out there, run on over to iTunes, rate and review the show, because we can't wait to hear from you, especially me. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek. I'm the host of the Her podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. Stay safe and stay well.